Howdy, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Objection, the worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery. I am contrarian a-hole number one, David Johnson, joined as always by contrarian a-hole number 1B, Dan Mancini.
Greetings.
And the genesis of this particular podcast is not a pretty one, is it?
No, it's ugly and controversial. And are you talking about this particular show or the podcast?
This podcast, this edition. The show obviously was born out of glory and in wonder because it was inspired by the one, you know, the beauty of Predator 2.
Yes. Yeah. So exactly. Okay. Yeah, I'll back up on that one and agree that yeah, the show itself is born of magnificence.
Yes, this particular episode was kind of an uphill climb. We had been going back and forth on what to do, and it's no secret that you know we may not be the biggest employers of show prep for radio shows and podcasts, but this one. There's probably even more
than usual. Yeah, more we than had a usual, couple backup plans fall through, and you know, we just need to get an intern. I think
we do. We need to get that approved by Staley and Melissa, right, and get this. You know, I don't know. Is the intern gonna live with you or me? That's a question. Like, do you have room in your house? I don't have a lot. My house is big. I don't have a lot of room.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I guess we could. Get an air mattress or something.
Yeah, I suppose an air mattress in the bathroom or something. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. We'll make it appealing. But yeah, so we need to keep on our toes. So we were just going back and forth what to do, and we ended up thinking that because a lot of the times our objection episodes happen to coincide with holidays, we decided to take a look at what holidays were coming up this week. And it's not on a Monday, obviously, but the big holiday this week is Ash Wednesday.
Ash Wednesday.
So we were kind of thinking, hey, what could we tie with Ash Wednesday? And your suggestion, Dan, was kick-ass priests, right?
Yeah.
We had like three, and then we ran out completely.
Right. And I forgot Priest from Superfly, who's not really a priest, but his name is Priest. So, you know, we could have gone with that one, I guess.
I mean, there's a movie there's a movie coming out based on a comic book called Priest with Paul Bettany. But, again, that's coming out. The only one I thought of was the Kung Fu Priest from Dead Alive. You know,
there you go. Yeah,
fantastic.
But, yeah, I'm sure if we went into the world of Kung Fu,
that's true.
Come up with a lot of them.
Yeah,
but in terms of like Catholic priests,
yeah, I mean,
it's a tougher call.
That's right. They're all like in Hollywood. They're I don't know. They're either foils for the protagonist to bear his or her sins, or like a child molester, or a corrupt shadowy figure trying to impede Tom Hanks's investigation into the truth. So
right, because really, the Catholic Church is kind of the ultimate old white man cabal.
That's true. That is true. And since obviously this entire podcast is made possible because of a generous, generous grant from the old white man cabal, we want to make sure that we treat this particular holiday with the respect that they demand in the small print of our grant. So
yeah. And I have to say that I think I've decided since the beginning of this show, this episode, that for Lent, I'm going to give up not doing show prep.
Oh, nice. Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what happens.
Can you give up a negative?
No, that's
for Lent? I'm not sure. I'm not Catholic, so I'm not sure, but, you know. you can.
Let's see, briefly, another possible idea was an action scenes that happen in a church.
Yeah.
Do you think of anything off the top of your head right now? In fact, let's bring in our special guest.
You know, I don't know. The thing that popped into my head was a lot of the gunfighting in the original Uncharted video game.
That's right. That's true.
There's some nice church fighting in there.
Mac McIntyre, do you think of any awesome church action scenes?
Hi there. How about every John Woo movie?
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. Every John Woo movie. So, ironically, every church and every John Woo movie happens to have doves on hand as well.
Exactly.
The finale of Tim Burton's Batman.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah, that's Corpse Bride too. Yeah.
That's and Desperado. Is it? Yeah, Desperado, right?
Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
That's right. That happens in the church too. Yes. Well, yeah, the first Batman.
Die Hard 2. I don't know if it's an action sequence, but, you know, there is a nice kill in it.
That's the icicle in the eyeball, right?
Yeah.
That's good. I would say out of the ones we just mentioned, that Batman one's probably my favorite. That's just a great one. That's that giant ridiculous cathedral is one of the main things I miss from the Christopher Nolan. I'd love to see that. So
it's just completely empty and dark and cobwebby because the citizens of Gotham are such heathens.
Yes, that's right.
Not a single one of them goes to the cathedral.
Originally built in the 1800s, and it's not even used at all. Sleepy Hollow had some pretty good church action scenes, you know, where the headless horseman impaled that guy and pulled him out. So, yeah, actually, there was a lot, I suppose. But we did settle on kind of going a more traditional objection route, where we take a movie or a production that's been picked on, and we kind of rise up to its defense. And this one... And Dan, you haven't seen this movie in a while. I've seen it. This is always something I've always kind of liked. I've always had a soft spot for. And Mac is our original source material expert. He's gonna flesh out this. But the movie in question is tied to Ash Wednesday, and it is Constantine, starring Keanu Reeves from 2005.
Yeah. Oh.
And again, the general idea is. And Matt, you're going to be able to cross-check this against the comic book, which, again, its deviation from the comic book, I think, spurred a lot of the negative feedback from
fans. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's sitting at about a 46% or so, rotten scale. So you can't think those are all comic book fans. So, overall, it doesn't look like the critics got a kick out of that much. But, again, the general idea is John Constantine died... Goes to hell, is brought back. Actually, no, he committed suicide, right?
Right.
Suicide, goes to hell, is brought back. His soul is damned. So he's going to try to earn his way back into God's good graces by wiping out demons. And at least that's what's in the movie. Is that a succinct explanation of the film? Right? And then a young and annoying Shia LaBeouf is actually probably one of his bigger original roles. He is his sidekick. So, Mac, let's start with you. Kind of lay the foundation here. What are the huge differences between the movie and the comic book? And I know I'm no comic book guy, but I know for one thing, John Constantine is a blonde, correct?
Right. Yeah. That's for starters. It's like I've joked before. You could go through the entire script, and wherever it says Constantine, just cross it out and write something like Larry. And you'd never know it was based on the comic. Keanu Reeves is Larry.
Gotcha. Larry the demon-killing mumbler, right.
Yeah, the comic, which is called Hellblazer, they changed the movie to avoid confusion with Pinhead and all of them.
Oh, yeah.
But Hellblazer, we've got John Constantine, actually, he's English, lives in England.
Okay.
Is the blonde guy, and he's not an exorcist. He's like a wizard. He's a magician type of guy. And the idea is... You know, you think of the wizard as being the guy with the robes and the beard and all that, and this character Constantine was created sort of to, you know, take the piss out of that image, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And because he's just this ordinary guy, they call him the old bastard. He's just the old bastard. He hangs out in the bar all day, chatting up with his friends. You know, he's just this schlub of a guy. You know, but when the chips are down, suddenly he breaks out with the magic spells and saves the day. He's very much an anti-hero. A lot of people call him a con artist. The way he kind of outsmarts his enemies and tricks them. So,
Are there anything that these two characters have in common? Movie, comic book?
Well, I should preface this by saying that my knowledge of the comic mostly comes from the run of when Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon were on the comic. A lot of the other artists and writers have worked on the character I'm not that familiar with. So in terms of, like, his origin story, that's kind of a gray area for me. Constantine, of course, he was created by Alan Moore, who also gave us, you know, Watchmen, V for Vendetta, and all those folks. We've also got, like, Peter Milligan and Jamie Delano have also worked on the comic. And so in terms of his origin story, the whole going to hell and back, I'm a little iffy on that. I just kind of know that... He's this hard-drinking, hard-smoking, world-weary guy who's...
Oh, there you go. They both smoke a lot, right?
Okay.
That's one thing.
It's common ground.
All right. So big disconnect there. And my recollection is that the fan community was not entirely pleased with the direction they took with the film, correct? That was a scuttlebutt, right?
Right. The whole idea, Keanu Reeves, I don't hate the guy, but, perhaps they could have picked an actor more appropriate to the character.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I don't know who that would be. Russell Crowe, maybe? I don't know.
maybe
technically English, though, is he?
Yeah, English and blonde, huh? I don't know. Maybe get Sam J. Jones from Flash Gordon to get an English accent. Or we have Timothy Dalton dye his hair. That's
yeah,
the other option.
Yeah, I was thinking Clive Owen if he went blonde.
That's not bad.
That world-weary persona. Yeah.
All right, Dan, I know you saw it a long time ago and you barely remember. You do remember liking it. So we'll start with you as far as the film goes. Anything in the recesses of your mind that you could summon up in defense of this?
The thing that has stuck with me big time is being really creeped out by Tilda Swinton.
Yes, that's
right. Gabriel the Angel, because of the fact that I couldn't tell whether she was supposed to be playing. Well, I guess it's a male, but or maybe not. I don't know if angels are genderless, but
yes,
it was just very, very creepy.
In the comic, the angels are all androgynous.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, that's all. There you
creepy,
go.
Creepy, but effective. Very effective.
And yeah, she did pretty well. I agree. She was I was very confused leaving that movie. Needed to go see my therapist almost immediately. for me, I mean, not having read the comic at all, so I'm just looking at it as a movie in a vacuum, kind of in itself. You know, I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it a pretty good amount. I mean, for one thing, it was a hard R movie, right? I mean, yeah. So it was really a horror movie more than anything, you know. So it wasn't like an action film. And I'm just a sucker for, I gotta say, I'm a sucker for like biblical theological horror, you know. With demons and Satan running around and angels, for some reason, I was just all about that. And, you know, Mac and Friday Filibusters, I've talked about how much I love shows like Supernatural, you know, where that was a huge plot point. So for some reason, that stuff just appeals to me. So that's my personal thing. I'm not a Keanu Reeves hater either. I know he operates on one kind of facial expression throughout every movie. I understand that. But I like him as well. So a few of those things came together, and like I thought it was genuinely interesting. I like that idea. I like the theological idea of this guy. He's damned, going to hell. He's trying to earn his way back into God's favor, and actually turns into somewhat of a mildly functional Sunday school lesson at the end there. You know, which is like it was interesting how kind of I don't know. It was like a Christian / horror. It was a horror movie using these kind of Christian overtones, obviously, these Judeo-Christian overtones. But it wasn't like typical kind of Hollywood sneery or, you know, looking down. They played within the rules of what the theology tends to be. And I thought that was kind of interesting as well. Plus, there was, you know, some pretty cool stuff with the demons. They were pretty scary looking. And, some interesting exorcism sequences. And there's the action scene at the end where he's got his... That probably wasn't in the comic book, right? Like this giant shotgun, gold cross shotgun full of holy water shells. You know, that, I'm sure that wasn't in it. That was kind of cool. And then finally, Peter Stormare as the devil was pretty cool too. Kind of squeezing out of the sky at the end with
I forgot about that.
Yeah, like sulfur and stuff. So that was kind of cool. So a lot of those interesting things, and you know, the whole thing was about. The idea was. You know, the spear that had pierced Christ's side is this kind of magical MacGuffin type of thing, you know, like something Indiana Jones would be looking for. And it's used to bring in Satan's son into the world. And that was kind of, I mean, you're not going to find that in First or Second Peter or anything. But again, that was kind of interesting, too. So a lot of different interesting things that came together well, in a pretty good mood, some nice action at the end, and just happened to tap into like a genre and an area of interest that I'm particularly drawn to. So. That's that's where I come from, and it wasn't like a hack made movie. It was like it was well made, and it was scary and hard R. So, and Kevin Rossdale from Bush. I think that was the first time I've ever seen him in a movie. So there you go.
Yeah.
And his face got melted. Too. So that's a bonus. So there you go.
That's a big bonus. Not a fan of that band. Seeing his face melt was kind of awesome.
That was a winner, yeah. So, again, I mean, I'm not sure how spirited defense of that movie is, but it was just a bunch of little things for me that came together and turned into a a memorable experience for me. So how about you, Mac? I know you said, I know you weren't enamored with it, but you thought it was okay. That's a good start. So
yeah, well, you know, my experience was like with a lot of the comic fans. I went walking out of the movie going, you know, that wasn't Hellblazer. That wasn't the comic, right. You know? And so maybe I need to go and watch it again and try to, you know, look at it as a standalone film and not as an adaptation.
I mean, you really have to do that, right? I mean, at some point, like I remember sitting in the theater watching The Bourne Identity, and about 5 minutes in, I was like, this is not going to be anything like the book. This is not the book. This is not an adaptation of the book I love. So I just made that conscious decision to switch over, like, you know, like, okay, not the book. I'm going to watch this movie called The Bourne Identity, starring some guy named Jason Bourne, who happens to also have the same name as a guy from the book called The Bourne Identity that I love. You know, right. Just kind of judged on its own merits. You know, that doesn't mean that doesn't say that they would have been better off either adapting Hellblazer more, getting a closer adaptation, or The Bourne Identity being more, similar to the book. But, yeah, I think I had to make that switch. So I think judging the movie as its own, again, what if it was a guy named Larry Fitzgerald from the Arizona Cardinals?
Fitzgerald Identity?
That's true. Yeah. Well, and in Hellblazer, you know, what if it was just what if Constantine was a movie, not like you said, Mac, not starring John Constantine, but starring Connie Johnstantine or something. You know, would you have liked it a little more?
See, that's why I need to go back and revisit it one of these days and just kind of have more of an open mind this time around, because who knows.
Yeah. Boy, well, let's see. What else can we – anything else we can
– I remember really liking the look of the film quite a bit. You know, I mean, it had a nice dark look to it. People kind of slag on CGI all the time as looking fake. And it's not that the CGI in Constantine looked real, but I think that sometimes when – CGI is kind of integrated into a world in a really stylized way, then it just becomes acceptable as opposed to being poked into a naturalistic looking world, you know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of what it was. You know, it's sort of like that kind of highly detailed, oddly color timed world like you see in the Hellboy movies and stuff like that. And I always kind of like that.
That plus, it happened. You know, helps.
Dark vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it's physically dark too, so that helps with the CGI. You know, that makes it a little more palatable.
So, yeah, and my recollection isn't that it was great CGI, but just that, you know, the overall look.
Yeah, there's some cool.
There
are a couple cool moments. Like there's that bug demon. Remember him? Like there's like a giant bug demon, and that was pretty good. And then obviously Gavin Rossdale's face melting was cool. All the demons exploding wasn't bad either. So,
as I recall, the gag was that when we see hell, it's just like the real world, but all like twisted.
Pretty much, it was like
same backgrounds, but they just make it all twisted and weird looking.
Yeah, actually, that in fact, like you see the top, you see the beginning of hell, and that was actually a pretty cool idea, pretty cool sequence. I never really expounded on that, where like Constantine puts his feet in water and stares at a cat's eyeballs. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know if that's ever looked at it. Did they explain that in the comic, or is that just like, hey, we need to get him to hell. Let's just – what are you looking at in your house right now? Let's put that in the script, and that's how he gets to hell, you know? So he goes to hell, and you're right. It's like L.A., you know, apocalyptic L.A., like, you know, in the Terminator 2 vision. And then the camera pans down to the – you know, then you see, like, traditional sulfur or hell. And then the CGI really kind of gets jumbled. And even in, like, high def – I remember, like, I can't quite tell what's going on there.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's a lot of fire and writhing CGI and doesn't quite do it for me. Hell and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey was a little more effective, you know, the giant Easter bunny in there. But, so that's probably where the CGI stumbled a bit. But the stuff, Mac, that you were mentioning was kind of a cool idea. Like, our world just kind of fire swept and whatnot.
Yeah, and you can kind of tell that the movie was sold to the studio, and I don't remember who released it.
I think Warner Brothers. I think it was Warner Brothers.
Yeah, you're right. That it was sold to them as kind of a comic book supernatural version of The Matrix, clearly. Because I think that if you take Keanu Reeves out of it and you do more of a straight adaptation of the comic book, then it probably doesn't get made. Or it doesn't get made as an R-rated movie. I mean, you can almost guarantee that the Warner execs were like, this is not the kind of movie that we would make for $100 million rated R, except for the fact that Keanu Reeves has been in The Matrix, and that was rated R, and it made a heap of money. So if we can bank on him, then, you know, fine. But otherwise, you know, it looks like the kind of movie that would be PG-13. So I'm kind of with you that I dig the fact that it's this scarier, more violent movie than what you would expect on first blush.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't, you know, if you had no, I mean, would you know it's a comic book movie if you weren't told?
No, you know? I wouldn't.
I don't know, I would just think it was just kind of a, you know, a theological, supernatural horror film. So I think taken in that respect, I think it works pretty well. Well, I don't know, anything else to add to this? This is, we're kind of wrapping this up. So maybe maybe we can give up 30-minute podcasts and do 28-minute podcasts.
I have one question, not remembering the movie. Yeah. Well, but, you know, in Keanu Reeves movies, there is always a moment in which he completely drops character and becomes Keanu Reeves. For like a few seconds. It's when they're on the building, you know, and he does the whoa.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, there's always that moment where he stops being whatever character he's playing and just becomes Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, like in Speed, I think, when he says, "We're boned." That was very much a Keanu Reeves moment. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
And pretty much 95% of Point Break.
Yeah. 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 That movie is just pretty much all.
All Keanu.
Yes. All Keanu. Is there a moment like that in Constantine? Does he, you know?
Oh, good question.
I'd say go Keanu for a second.
When he puts his feet in the water and he goes, "Oh, that's cold."
That's not bad, right? Yeah. That's not too bad. I'm sure there's. You know, there's a handful of moments. Probably a couple when he's kind of scolding Shia LaBeouf's character. And by the way, I just need to add this as well. Another piece of credit I will give. Because another credit I'll give to the movie is it was a deleted scene, and thankfully it was deleted. But I think, you know, Constantine goes to the graveyard where, you know, goes to Shia LaBeouf's character's grave, you know? Uh-huh. And he, like Angel Shia LaBeouf emerges from the ground and flies up to heaven or something like that, you know? Uh-huh. Which doesn't make any sense. They don't really make any sense at all. You know, just kind of like half-assed attempt at closure. So, at the very least, kudos to them for keeping that scene deleted. You know, I'm just happy with that. And one more thing. It does also star, I think, one of the, as far as gorgeous actresses go, one of the most underrated gorgeous actresses of our time, Rachel Weisz.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, I think people would say she's attractive, but I've always thought that, like, you know, she's really attractive, and she's in this movie, and she hangs around in a tub a lot, so that's not too bad either, right? So there you go. And,
you know, she's probably the only reason to see the Mummy movies.
That's right. that is accurate. All right, well, that'll, I think, we'll put an end to this edition of The Objection. So, Constantine, I'm not sure if this was – I think it might have been on – because it was an HD DVD, and Warner Brothers is doing a swap, so you can get it on Blu-ray. So I think it is available if you do want to take a look at it, refresh your memory.
Yeah, I may have to give that a run.
Yeah, I would, you know, take a look at it, but looking at it as a context, as a standalone, you know, supernatural horror action movie, I think there's some fun to be had. So, Mac, thank you for jumping on board and giving us that comic context. Always appreciated. And Dan, I guess that's it. Thank you to the Old White Man Cabal for funding this podcast. Really, where would we be without you?
Absolutely, yeah. And Testosterone.
Yes.
From Chef Boyardee.
Absolutely. And speaking of the Bourne Identity, please be sure to check out the latest from Robert Ludlum, the Harrigan Gambit, I believe.
Yes.
Right? That is.
Yes.
That will be released pretty soon.
Top of the New York Times bestseller list, guarantee.
Definitely. So with that being said, Dan, what's left?
Thanks, 10 points easy.